Welcome to Bookstore Explorer, the show where we go behind the shelves with booksellers to celebrate the magic of independent bookstores. I'm author and, as of this episode, bookseller, Matt Browning. As regular listeners know, I took a few months off to open my own bookshop, and now that it's up and running, I'm finally able to get back to the show. Now, I'm calling this season two, even though I don't necessarily think in terms of seasons with the show. I've got some exciting guests and some new features lined up for upcoming episodes. So you want to stay tuned, but to kick us off, I'm heading north to a state that I visited, but I didn't make it to this shop, I'm sorry to say. My guest today is Katya D'Angelo, owner of Bridgeside Books in Waterbury, Vermont. Now, Bridgeside does so many cool things, from renting out board games to helping facilitate a one-town, one-book club, and maybe even weddings. We'll see. Katya is here to tell us all about that, so come along as we go bookstore exploring. Katya, welcome to Bookstore Explorer, Season 2, Episode 1. I'm unofficially terming it.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Thank you. So I have been to Vermont. I have been to Burlington, Vermont, which I don't think is too far from where you are, but I did not make it to Waterbury.
Yeah, we are about 30 minutes east of Burlington, right on the highway. Most people who come up to this area end up in Stowe, because everyone knows Stowe, and they actually have to drive right through Waterbury in order to get there. But we're a little town of about 5,500 people or so. We have a very quaint village, not quite as kind of touristy, for lack of a better word, as Stowe is. Stowe is lovely, not to knock them, but we're a little more kind of, this is like real village Vermont.
Now, at that size, is your store kind of the indie bookshop?
It is, yeah. We are the only bookstore in town. There is one in Stowe. There's one 15 minutes away, 20 minutes away in Montpelier. So they're up in this area, but we're the only one in Waterbury.
Now, I usually begin with sort of a physical description of the space. So I ask, you know, my guests to sort of walk us through your store so that our listeners can kind of get a vibe and a sense of the space we're talking about.
Yeah, so our store is in a old building built in the mid-1800s, and it has had many iterations. It was once a general store back in the day, and then a bowling alley, a fitness studio, a ceramic studio, and then a bookstore and some things in between. So the footprint and the walls have come and gone and come again. When you first walk in, you're immediately in kind of the nonfiction area. The new releases table is right in front of you. And then we have a big bookcase with Vermont titles, Vermont authors, books about Vermont, hiking, maps, all sorts of stuff like that. And then if you move further through, you get into kind of the fiction room, quote unquote. And that has also a new release table, and YA also lives in there. And then there's another kind of big room that has the kids section, puzzles. We have a lot of board games. My husband is really into tabletop games. The cookbooks are in there. The art supplies are in there. So that's the other area. And some people come in and they're like, is this the same store? And it definitely is.
So you only carry new inventory, right?
We do have some bargain books, remainders, a small section of that that I started earlier this year. I've toyed with the idea of used books. I have not made a decision yet. That comes with a whole other thing. I don't want to get boxes of used books just being left outside my store. Mm-hmm. And from what I've heard, that is a common occurrence. So just trying to figure out if we go that route, how to manage it. So TBD.
I want to go back to the bowling alley reference. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done a lot of these now, but I think you might be my first, you know, former bowling alley. I mean, are there any remnants of that being there?
Yeah, so the floors are underneath the carpet that are in here. We're attached to a cafe that is a separate business, but we have a door between them, and they actually refinished the floors. So if you go in there, you can see the bowling alley floors. Mm. And they do extend into our space, but you just can't see them. They're somewhere there.
I mean, I'm envisioning that your shop must be long and narrow.
Yeah, so the building itself is, yes, very long and narrow, and we're right up against the train tracks in the back, so the train comes through every twice a day. But it's actually pretty wide, too. So we have about 1,600 square feet total. It is definitely longer than it is wide.
I was doing my homework and, you know, researching the history of the place, and I understand it's been around longer than you were part of it. So tell me about how it began and sort of walk us then up to when you took over.
Sure. So it started in 2009 by a woman named Hayata, and she was a local person. She had worked for many years at Green Mountain Coffee Roasters, which started in town and then got bought by they bought Keurig, but anyway, that's a whole other issue. And she just had always had this dream to open a bookstore in town. And Waterbury has gone through several kind of revitalizing moments in the most recent history. And she just felt the time was right. So she opened initially in about 600 square feet of what we currently have now, and then kind of slowly but surely expanded. And then the pandemic, she shut down March 2020 and emptied out about half of the store and just had it empty. And turns out she had been thinking about selling it right before the pandemic and had a buyer lined up. And it was kind of, you know, hush hush. She wasn't making a big deal about it. And then the pandemic hit, schools closed, the buyer had kids, she backed out. Obviously, the world, we didn't know what the heck was going on.
Right.
And so Hayata was like, okay, well, I'll just, you know, do my best to keep it going. And then she announced was about August of that year of 2020 that she was ready to try and sell it again. At that point, we were back to indoor shopping at the very least. And she was ready to do some new stuff with her life. And I live literally around the corner. I walk here. And my husband and I kind of looked at each other and we're like, well, that's an interesting option. I had been working in the travel industry, which obviously nobody was traveling. And I had started another small business 5 years ago in town. So I kind of understood what that meant to own a business, to be, you know, in charge of everything. And we decided to go for it. We ultimately decided that the pandemic was going to kind of end one way or the other. Either we were all going to just live in the pandemic, way for the rest of our lives, or it was going to end up something like this. And so October 2020, we closed on a bookstore.
So I'm gathering that, you know, you didn't have a well of experience as a bookseller to draw from.
Correct. Yes. I had no experience in the book industry or bookselling. I'd had retail jobs, so that at least was familiar, but it's a really different beast than other general retail stores. I have a degree in architectural studies. I worked in a school in marketing. I was a baker at one point. So, but every 5 years, I find that seems to be my cycle with careers.
Well, marketing skill set is going to be very handy, I'm sure, or has been.
That is true. That has really come in handy. And like I said, I started another business, very, very small business. And so I knew, and we lived here, so we knew the community and I knew people through the business and had, you know, created a network through there and knew a lot of the other, in fact, most of the other business owners in town. So it just felt very natural, and people in town knew me. So it wasn't just like some outsider coming in and purchasing the bookstore. So it was good. The interesting thing about taking over the pandemic was actually that I could make a fair amount of changes pretty quickly. And everyone was just used to just things changing with everything. So it, I didn't have a ton of people coming in and be like, oh, you used to do this and now you don't or whatever. So that was kind of a weird silver lining.
So how did you get your bearings in terms of learning, you know, the specifics of the book trade?
Oh, gosh, it was really a lot of trial by fire. taking over in October, on the one hand, was great because we were heading into holiday sales, which is our most retailers' biggest quarter. So we knew that was going to be helpful as a new, you know, new to us business. But that also meant immediately I had to buy a lot of inventory because the previous owner, knowing she was selling, wasn't restocking the shelves. And I had no idea what our community read. I didn't know what books sold better than others, what kind of puzzles people liked. I mean, it was really a shot in the dark for a good 6 months. And, you know, I mean, I had to learn everything. Thank goodness for some of my publisher reps. They were super helpful. I eventually got Book Manager, which I know you've had some other bookstores talk about. And that was such a huge help in terms of inventory and purchase of, you know, point of sale system and all that. So, yeah, it was just like rip the Band-Aid off, just get right into it.
No, I usually ask this typically later in the show, but since you opened, you know, right in 2020, by the end of the year, I think we were getting, you know, somewhat used to how life was going to be, but there were still a lot of ups in the air. But, you know, a lot of people opened bookshops during the pandemic or immediately following. Why do you think that is? I guess is how I'll ask the question.
Oh, I think it's twofold. One has to do with, actually maybe threefold. I think a lot of people realized what it would mean if small businesses went out of business. And that was a very real possibility. And it happened a lot of places because people couldn't shop and employees couldn't come to work and all that stuff. And so there was more support for indie bookstores. So that was like a boon to the industry and the business. I also think because a lot of people were uncertain in their job or had been laid off or their job just poof, disappeared. Suddenly everyone had no excuse not to do something like this, whether it was starting a bookstore specifically or any other. I mean, I know tons of people that went out on their own with small food businesses and other types of retail because they, A, didn't really have a choice, but also there was nothing holding them back now, you know, no golden handcuffs, so to speak, or a commute or whatever. So, and then I think people, the physicality of books and bookstores is just enduring. People like to hold things in their hand and discover. I think when you go into a bookstore, you're discovering. You might have an idea of what you like, but every bookstore is going to be a little bit different, have a different selection. And so you're going to go into the section you like to read, say fantasy or sci-fi, and you might see a book there you've never heard of before. And you're like, oh my God, that's so cool. I'm going to get this and read it. So yeah, I think all of that came together to really bring up indie bookstores and people who wanted to open one and for those new ones to be successful and the old ones to be successful.
Now, at the beginning, you kind of walked us through the sections and, you know, some of the genres that you carry. Now that you're a couple years into it, do you kind of feel that you've got the vibe of what the town reads? And because I'm curious what sells well now that you're a couple years into this thing.
Yes. Yeah. No, I definitely have a much better handle, although there's still surprises. Like some books I think for sure are going to sell and I bring in a whole bunch and they just sit there and then I might bring in one copy of something else and it goes like the day I put it out and suddenly I get four special orders for it. So it's still like, you just never know. But that being said, anything nature sells well here. I mean, people visit Vermont and move to Vermont and stay in Vermont because nature is so accessible and all around us and it's just gorgeous. So nature and science sells very well. fiction, mostly like literary fiction. Politics does not sell well here. And we don't have a sports section. I have a couple of books, you know, I have like one on the Patriots. I've got a couple on golf right now, getting ready for Father's Day, but we don't have a solid sports section. Yeah. And then anything Vermont sells, anything that takes place in Vermont, is about Vermont, obviously Vermont authors, Vermont people, and the people that visit just love it, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite questions to ask, and I've had a lot of listeners tell me they love this too, is what are some of your favorite books to hand sell to customers who maybe just want a recommendation, but don't really give you too much else to go on? Do you have kind of favorites you keep sort of in your mental back pocket?
Yes. So I am mostly a nonfiction reader. That's where I live typically. Although in the last 2.5 years, I have definitely broken out of that. So I have at least one book in almost every section that I can hand sell. But my go-tos are The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. That is absolutely one of my favorites. It's also a relatively short read, but it's really powerful and impactful. And so I recommend, that's pretty much universal to anybody. And then Power of One by Bryce Courtenay, which is kind of a classic at this point. That's another one, very universal fiction, takes place in South Africa during apartheid, kind of a coming of age book. And then in nonfiction, anything by Mary Roach, who is a humor science writer, which those often don't go hand in hand, but she nails it every time. Bill Bryson, of course, Eric Larson in history, and and then we have our number one selling fiction book, The Treehouse on Dog River Road, which is written by an author who lives in Stowe, but it takes place in Waterbury, and the characters actually come into Bridgeside Books in the story. So it's like a smart rom-com. It's rom-com, but there's some layers to it, which makes it a really fun read.
And I hope I'm not about to misspeak, but that's a perfect segue into one of my next questions, which was that you guys did a sort of citywide book club with that book.
Yes.
So tell me about that, because that's a really cool idea.
We called it One Town, One Book. And we did not come up with this idea. This has been done in, I think the first one was in Chicago, like 10 years ago, maybe. And a lot of other towns and cities and even states, like Vermont has Vermont Reads, and they pick a book that, you know, everyone's supposed to read, or not supposed to, but, you know. And it was really a way to get the whole town on the same page, quote unquote. We felt like coming out of COVID last year, was our first year coming out of COVID, people were kind of still disconnected. And, we had this vision of people reading the same book and like walking around downtown with it and someone saying, "Oh, I'm reading that too. What do you think?" And starting a conversation with someone you might not know. Maybe you start a book club with your neighbors or your street. It was very open to interpretation, but ultimately we chose this book, and we sold almost 300 copies, which is huge.
Wow.
And but we estimate about 400 people read it between the library. We put copies in the Little Free Library and at the food shelf. And then, you know, we know people shared it around. So, you know, 400 people reading the same book in the same town is kind of cool.
That is kind of cool. So, I mean, did you do any sort of like formal gatherings to discuss the book, or was it sort of informal all the way around?
No, we did have a kind of culminating author event with the author in September. So we launched it in April on Independent Bookstore Day last year. And then we had the author come in September. A lot of author events, interestingly, that bookstores do are right at the launch of a book, and very few people have actually read it. They go there and then buy the book at the event, which I always thought was like a little weird, but that's how it works. But this event was fun because everybody had already read the book. So they were actually talking about what they read, the ideas in the book, the, you know, feelings about the setting in town, questions for the author. So it was much more of a discussion than just the author kind of reading a passage and talking about her work. Mm-hmm. So that was really, it was a nice event.
Is it something you plan to keep going with?
Yeah, we launched this year's on Independent Bookstore a day again. We decided to go for a nonfiction title this year. And it is a book called Vermont Perspectives, but written by Ann Averett, who lives a couple towns over. And it is a collection of essays about Vermont, about the landscape, the people, the history, the vibe. They're, you know, 1 to 2 page essays, very short and accessible. And so far in just this month, we've sold 44, 46, something like that. So we're on the right track for another banner year.
I mean, I was trolling around your website and it seems like you do a lot of cool creative events. I saw you doing a Pride readathon because we're taping on June 1, so the beginning of Pride month, but you do weddings. You know, you mentioned board game rentals, which is a really cool idea. I mean, I just threw a lot of examples at you that I would love to hear more about each one. Let's do with the board game one, because there's a shop not too far from me that does that. And I thought to myself, do you get things back with missing pieces? But that gentleman told me no. Everybody's very careful.
Yeah, that's been our experience. We have had a piece or two go missing, nothing that has severely affected the game. And usually we can substitute something. But yeah, the game rentals, it took a little while to build up some steam. And for the first few months that we had them, I was like, I don't know if this is going to work or people are going to be into it. And then the summer hit and people who were here on vacation for a week were renting them. People who were going on family vacations, like a road trip, they'd bring a game to their family, or if they had family coming in town, or they just had, you know, a bunch of games at home that they've already played a million times. They don't need to add permanently to their collection, but they just want something fresh and different. So that's what we've been seeing with the game rentals, and they've really become quite popular. We have had people come in and say, oh, I heard you do game rentals. Where are those? Which is very validating. Yeah, it's $6 for a week. And we have only had one game not returned ever.
I mean, that's pretty good response.
Yeah, not terrible. Luckily, it was not one of the games that has been super popular rental, but you know, still kind of a bummer when it happens, but you know, that's the risk we take.
So you host weddings?
We have not yet.
Okay, but it's an option. I mean, getting married at a bookstore sounds perfect.
Yeah, it is an option. We did have an engagement 2 weeks ago.
I think I saw that on your Instagram, I guess it was.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. That was a couple months in the making. They were visiting from out of town, and the friends of the, you know, engaged couple, the now engaged couple, knew she loved bookstores and particularly Blind Date with a Book, which we do a lot of. And so wanted to make sure that we had Blind Date with a Book here, you know, some wrapped up to buy. And then her fiance was going to have his own book, which was actually an engagement journal that we wrapped to match. And then we put a specific little card in there. And so we knew it was her birthday. So when she came to check out, we said, oh, we heard it was your birthday. Here's a special book, you know, for the day. And she unwrapped it and she like looked kind of quizzical at it for a moment. And then her boyfriend, you know, was down on a knee behind her and you know, that was all the whole thing. So
they need to come back there and have their wedding.
We did.
If that couple is listening, go back there and have your wedding.
Yep. They did ask for a quote. We sent them all the information. But you know, it's a big thing to decide on. They're also you know, again, from out of town. So it's not quite as easy as, you know, someone local doing it, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. We're hopeful. That is on our bookstore bucket list.
So, I mean, what's next for you? Do you have anything cool coming down the pike that you want to talk about?
You know, we're honing our event strategy after, you know, we didn't do anything during COVID. So actually that was kind of a nice pressure off from learning about the bookstore and to not have to do events. And since we restarted them, it's just been kind of finding what works and what doesn't. So kind of growing those, repeating the seasonal events that have been doing well. I have a vision of somehow funding a bench that's shaped like an open book and getting a local artist to paint it. So trying to figure out how to get that. They're made in Illinois and it costs a couple thousand dollars to buy and ship.
I feel like I've seen pictures of them on social media and they're
you definitely
gorgeous.
Have. Yeah. You definitely have. So my dream is to get one set outside in our little area. You know, we don't have a big outdoor space, but you know, little one. And you know, it's functional, it's a place for people to relax, it's a piece of public art. So that's the hope. Yeah. I'm looking forward to trying to figure out that.
you said something that kind of sparked a question, not to put you on the spot, but you know, a lot of times on the show, guests talk about the things that go well, right? But you mentioned that you're learning what doesn't. Is there anything that hasn't gone well? You know, valiant try, but I don't think we'll do that again.
Yes. We tried a Mother's Day event. So that was modeled off of a Valentine's Day, and not your average date night is what we called it. Mm-hmm. And it was wildly successful. And you basically bought a ticket. You came to the store. We had some snacky things and you went on a scavenger hunt essentially around the store to find books that matched the prompts on a card. And we were like, oh, how cool would this be to do Mother's Day? And so we essentially did the same thing, but you know, did it for Mother's Day and changed some of the prompts to make it more mother or family or, you know, mother relationship based. And we got two people signed up or two people that bought tickets and we ultimately canceled it. We didn't do it because it wasn't worth it to just have two people there.
But what a cool idea. I mean, maybe other holidays. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the Valentine's Day one definitely. So we've done that 2 years in a row and 2 years in a row it's sold out. So that's, that worked, but yeah. Mother's Day, not so much.
So usually as we come to the end, I always kind of ask this question last. And this whole podcast and my whole bookstore store thing for years has been based on the concept that bookshops are magical places. You know, I've heard it over and over and over again. But I always like to ask each guest, what does that mean to you when you hear or when you think about bookshops being magical places?
I think what makes them magical for me is the individuality of each indie bookstore. There's no corporate style guides or display requirements or the end cap must look like this or your walls have to be painted beige. Each indie is really totally different from all the others. And it's also like a microcosm of the communities that they support and who support them. So, you know, the books that I have in here, I'm sure we have some of the similar titles, but I'm sure we have a lot of different ones. And so like you, when I travel, I like to go into indie bookstores and like, see what's going on, see what color they painted their walls and how they laid things out. And you get also a taste for or a sense of the personality of the owner and the staff. And it's just, it feels cozy and like personal and that you want to, I don't know, hang out there.
I want to thank you so much for coming on. Before we go, I want you to tell folks how they can find you on social media, your website and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. So you can find us at bridgesidebooks.com and on Instagram and Facebook at Bridgeside Books.
And I forgot to ask too, the name Bridgeside, I mean, is that just literal? You're next to one?
Yes, exactly. There is a bridge. I can see it from the front two windows. It goes over the railroad tracks. And our logo actually is the bridge walkway, like the trellis work and the iron work is directly taken from the actual bridge on our logo.
So I imagine it's probably a town landmark. So the name really kind of does you justice in that sense.
Yes, it does. Yeah. It does, which is good. But, you know, if I ever wanted to open a second location or something, that it could be detriment, because then it's like, well, either I find another bridge or I just have to hope that they know, you know, it came from somewhere else. I don't know. But yeah, so it is literal.
Well, thanks again for coming on. It's been a pleasure. Pleasure meeting you and learning about the shop.
Thank you so much, Matt. A pleasure. Definitely.
Bookstore Explorer is produced and hosted by me, Matt Browning. Our theme music is Come Right Back to You by Max Hickson. You can follow all my bookstore explorations at bookstoreexplorer.com or on Instagram and Facebook at Bookstore Explorer. And follow us on Twitter at Bookstore EXPLR. Thanks for listening.